and welcome to Unjustly Maligned, the show for people who go against the grain. We seek to rehabilitate the overlooked, ignored, derided, or the just plain hated. Movies, novels, music, comic books, video games, whatever. If everyone hates it, we'll find someone who loves it and let them explain why you should too. I'm your host, Anthony Johnston, and my guest today is the writer and academic Katie Rex. Katie, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Now, I strongly suspect that the vast majority of our listeners have about as much familiarity with today's subject as me, which is to say basically none. So I think this one's going to be quite interesting. So please tell us what you've come on the show to talk about. Give us some context around its production, its release, its reception, why it is generally maligned and why you think that that's wrong.
Okay, well, rather than talking about some really cool 80s movie or a fantastic early generation video game, I thought I would talk about Pretty Little Liars, which is a fantastic show on, I think, the CW. I watched it on Netflix, so, you know, there's a limit to how much I know about its actual release in the real world.
Okay.
You know what I mean, right?
Yeah.
And it's a spectacular show. It's been, I think, very, how do I want to put it? I guess maligned is the right word. It stars a bunch of teenage girls doing teenage girl things, which, as we know, as a culture, is generally looked down upon and ridiculed. It started in, I'm seeing on Wikipedia, 2010, and I've watched every season.
So when did you start watching? How did you come across it?
Oh, I saw it on Netflix in 2012, I want to say. And so I've been watching it since then. I didn't start at the beginning like some of the hardcore fans.
But you did start watching from the beginning, I assume.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Did you get a chance to watch the first episode?
I did. I only got a chance to watch the first episode, yes. That's the only one I saw. But so, I mean, tell us more about the show itself and the premise. And, your experience, because I assume that you binge watched it then. So I want to know more about your experience of actually coming across it and, you know, falling in love with it.
Well, so I do this thing when, especially when I'm doing the non-intensive stuff when I'm writing. There's the intensive stuff where you're writing actual words on the page, and then there's the non-intensive stuff where you're looking up the history of King David, right?
Sure.
So the less intense stuff I usually have a program on in the background on Netflix. And this was one of those. I've watched The Vampire Diaries that way as well. So not what most people consider quality programming. But they're wrong. So we've got this whole cultural concept that sort of spits on the teen dramas. And the reason that it does that is not because these teen dramas are intended to appeal to men or, you know, action fans, which are synonymous, but because they deal a lot with the incredibly extreme emotions that teenagers experience, which they really do. And that's one of the things that's so, I think, great about Pretty Little Liars, is it takes this really extreme premise. And the premise is that these four young women are best friends. Well, five young women are best friends, and one of them goes missing. And in the year that the other one is missing, the original four sort of drift apart and are brought back together by first the discovery of their friend's body, and then the text messages of a mysterious antagonist who may or may not be their dead friend.
Right. Well, and that's the premise of the pilot. They actually start getting the texts before their friend's body is discovered. They start to think, oh, is she still alive somehow? Because these texts contain things that only she would know, very personal stuff that she's threatening to, you know, secrets that she's threatening to reveal to the world. And then her body's discovered. So either it's, you know, her from beyond the grave, or somebody else who somehow knows all the things that she did.
Do you think he knows about...
No, how could he?
Oh my god. It's from...
I got one too.
I'm still here, bitches.
And I know everything. Hey. You can't
turn back. Right, which is terrifying, because when you're a teenager, secrets are your bread and butter.
Are they? Were they?
did you not have secrets as a teenager?
You not on the same level as as the characters. And obviously, I mean, obviously it's sort of heightened reality for television. But it did strike me as I was watching it that these are some pretty, you know, everybody's got some crazy, potentially life-destroying secret. Everybody is, it's all so dramatic.
Well, no, I think they're mostly realistic. So at the beginning, Hannah's big secret, I think, is that she's a shoplifter.
Yeah.
Right? So that's not terribly abnormal. And Spencer's secret is that she kissed her sister's boyfriend. Which, again, I think is pretty standard. And Emily's secret is that she's gay, which is a thing that I think a lot of people can relate to.
Yep.
So Aria is the only really weird one, because her secret... Well, which secret is Aria's at the pilot?
At the start, it's that she knows her father had an affair with, I think, one of his students?
Yes, Meredith. She's off.
Right. It's not that the secrets themselves are, you know, at the initial stage anyway, particularly outlandish or unrealistic. It's more that other people know them and they're all sort of bound by this mutually assured destruction. And the fact that that nobody has let anybody else's secret out, I think is what, really sort of stretched my suspension of disbelief more than anything. I find it hard to believe that all of them would have managed to keep all these secrets for so long and that it never would have slipped out to somebody who would then tell everybody else.
Well, it must have slipped out to somebody, or where are they getting the text messages from?
Ah, yeah, good point.
I think so. It's very dramatic. It's got a lot of camp to it. It's got this weird mix, I think, of teen drama and almost like B-horror movie.
The first thing I thought when I saw the opening scene of the first episode was that, like, it seemed like a TV version of I Know What You Did Last Summer.
It is a little bit. It is. But it I think it's one of those shows that is super aware of what genre it's in.
Right.
And both satirizes that and also completely embraces it. There's this one point where Spencer is in a fight with her sister in a later episode, and Spencer says something to the effect of, "What did you just say to me?" And her sister says, "Oh, do you want me to tweet it to you?"
Okay.
which is maybe both the most ridiculous and the most fantastic line of dialogue. I mean, I wish I had written that.
So were you just browsing around on Netflix when you found this?
Yeah, I think so. It wasn't
recommended to you by somebody, perhaps?
Not by a person, no. It may have been recommended by Netflix.
Oh, by the algorithm, right.
Yeah. No, I don't know anybody prior to having started watching it that was a big fan, but then I did discover once I was watching it that a bunch of people on Tumblr are pretty big fans of the show.
Why doesn't that surprise me?
I know, right? Well, I think the big thing is that Emily is a woman of color and a lesbian and dealing with a lot of, I mean, she's concerned that her father, who is in the army, won't be around long enough for her to come out and for them to have that conversation and for him to accept it before he leaves again to go who knows where and maybe not come back. And I think Emily's story is one of the most compelling, but they've all got amazing things going on.
You, incidentally, you mentioned the Vampire Diaries earlier, and that's actually made by the same people.
Is it? Because that one's blatantly terrible.
Well, when I say the same people, I mean that this was originally, apparently, I mean, I had no idea of this until I looked into it, but this was apparently created by a book packaging company, which is really difficult thing to sort of describe, really. They're basically a production company that produces books, often written under pen names, often in a series, for a publisher. So as acting as a sort of like a middleman almost, but they're kind of more like a creative house that then gives the publisher a completed book that the publisher then publishes. Things like the Nancy Drew series of, you know, of books, and the Three Investigators back in the day, and, you know, Hardy Boys, that sort of thing. Those are produced in this way, you know?
Or like Marvel.
Well, and that's what I was actually getting to, was that you and I, obviously being more entrenched in the comics scene, it is very much like an editorially driven comics company, yeah, in that they come up with the concepts and then they find people to put these things together. But they also have ties with media production, with TV companies and movie companies, to sell the rights to the IP to those companies, license adaptations like this. And yes, the same company, apparently. Vampire Diaries wasn't one of those. Vampire Diaries was created by its author, whose name escapes me at the moment, but they, you know, bought the rights off of her. But they do also do this packaging thing, and apparently that's how Pretty Little Liars started, was they, you know, gave the idea to Sarah Shepherd, the novel author, at the same time as they were developing it to sell to television, which I find fascinating.
Absolutely. I should probably read those books.
Oh, well, and that was going to be my next question. Have you read the books?
I have not, but I definitely would. I'm always interested in the idea that the book didn't come first necessarily, but sort of co-occurred. Because then when there are differences, you got to wonder.
Well, and that is actually a bit weird, in that even though they were co-produced, the TV series is apparently only loosely based on the books. But I put that down largely to differences in media. You know, you can't structure a TV series the same way that you structure a novel, and, you know, and so forth. There are apparently, I think, 16 books by now.
Well, that is so much reading that I have to do.
Yeah. You got to catch up.
Right.
So
I'm already behind on my weekly poll. This is not helping.
So you found it through Netflix's recommendations, got into it, then you discovered that there was a fandom. And is that what's kept you immersed? Or because sustaining something like this over, what are they, in 6 seasons now? And sustaining this kind of mystery story over that many seasons can't be easy.
Well, they sort of do introduce new mysteries. For instance, I think in season 3 is when we discover who A is.
Right.
So you don't have to have it be the same mystery. And any good show that, you know, continues for that long has to change its conceit slightly or come up with different goals.
So once they discover who the mysterious A sending all these messages is, well, isn't that the end of the show? How do they sustain it beyond that?
Well, you'd think so. But it turns out that this mysterious A has tried to kill them, and then she's somebody who's pretty close to them, and so they have to sort of deal with the aftermath of having been close to somebody who would be that destructive toward them, which is a very emotionally difficult thing. And then also, it's possible that Allison's still alive.
Oh, really? After all that, it turns out it may not have been her body anyway.
Right.
The body that they mysteriously didn't find a year ago, but now suddenly do.
Right.
Which is, that was something, I mean, I know you, that's the premise of the show. Of course, you need that in order to drive the show forward. But I did, while I was watching, I was like, isn't that kind of unlikely? She was buried under a gazebo that was being built at the time she went missing. It's like, well, you really think they wouldn't have checked under, you know, in the foundations of the currently under construction gazebo when right. they were trying to find her the first time around?
Well, she was kind of a wild kid. They probably were not wrong to assume that she just ran off with some boy.
Well, you know, maybe so. It just strikes me as a not very thorough job.
That's true.
The whole thing felt a bit like, and you saying that they've now compounded further mysteries on top of this. It did feel like it was being set up as a sort of Desperate Housewives for young girls.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we love the drama. And by we, I mean people who appreciate television geared specifically towards melodrama-loving women.
Right.
The audience is not entirely female, but God, it's really very largely female.
I figure it has to be overwhelmingly female, yeah, yeah. What about the, have they advanced the series in time? Like, or are they perpetually stuck in high school?
It has advanced through time, yep. I think the girls are about to go off to college in the newest season.
Oh, okay, so they've slowed time, but it is slowly advancing.
Right.
Do they all finally have touchscreen phones now?
Yes, absolutely. Well, it was 2010.
It's 2000, exactly. It's 2010. She's still using a flip phone.
I had a flip phone in 2010.
Oh, okay.
I think. I don't know.
So tell me more about why, what it is that keeps you watching. Because it's one thing to sort of get drawn into something initially and watch a season or two and, you know, enjoy the fandom, but to sustain your interest over a, you know, such a long period of time, over six full length series, you know, it's got to be doing something that really appeals to you. So tell me more about what it is that keeps you coming back to it.
I think so. It has this sort of facade to it, this face where it's just this absolutely garbage show, and it in a lot of ways is. It has the most ridiculous costumes that I've ever seen 16-year-old girls wear. And it takes that premise, that persona, and it uses it to explore what I think are some really interesting ways that actual, especially teenagers, but actual people experience. For instance, the Arya character, you'll notice in the first episode, and this continues throughout the series, she started with pink hair, right? Or pink streaks in her hair in the flashbacks. And in a lot of ways, her character especially is trying on different ways to be. Because, you know, when you're 16, you don't necessarily know who you are and who you want to be. And one of the easiest ways that a lot of teenagers accomplish discovering that is literally just by changing their look. You know, I want to be punk now, so I'm going to shave my head, or I'm going to get better grades, so I'm going to stop wearing contacts and wear glasses. And these are very superficial changes that we make, but we feel different when we make them. And the show does a lot of that to extremes, obviously. Honestly, I would kill for the blazer collection that these girls have. but they do a really good job of showing what it's like to explore who you are as a person. And they do it, you know, in the context of a bunch of ridiculous lies and secrets, like the Jenna thing. Which is super screwed up. Is the Jenna thing part of your current?
Is that the character who walks into the funeral wearing sunglasses? She appears to be blind.
She's blind.
Right.
Yes.
That's literally all. That's all you see of her in the pilot, and that clearly there is some issue between her and the girls.
Well, there won't be a huge spoiler here because I think it's in the first three episodes. I will tell you.
I wouldn't worry too much about spoilers.
I don't know. I really would like your audience to watch the show. So, they blinded her.
Oh, wow.
The girls did. Yeah. She, Allison thought that her creepy brother was watching them try on each other's clothes through the window. And so she went on a rampage and got some fireworks and threw them in the garage where she thought the brother was. And it turns out he was fine, but it caught something else on fire and some chemicals went nuts and Jenna went blind.
Okay.
We've got secrets that are very realistic secrets for a teenager to have, like Emily's gay. And then we've got secrets that are ludicrous. Like, all four of these girls are aware that they are responsible for blinding a person.
Right. And somehow have managed to, in fact, why didn't Gemma tell everybody that it was them who did it? Or does she not know?
Jenna knows and her brother knows, but Jenna and her brother were having an affair. They're step siblings. So still gross, less gross. Allison threatened to tell everyone that they were, you know, together in that way if they ever told that the girls are the reason that Jenna went blind.
Right. Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, that is getting into the realm of the ludicrous.
Yeah, no. So we're trading in some pretty serious secrets here. And they are generally pretty spectacular. And I mean that, like, as a spectacle.
Right. In the literal sense, yeah. I didn't recognize the only actors in it that I recognized were Holly Marie Coombs, of course.
Mm-hmm. Big Charm fan?
Right. Finally playing a character like her own age, which was nice to see. And the guy who plays her husband. I couldn't tell you what else I've seen him in, but I definitely recognized him. You know, I know I've seen him before. But I didn't recognize any of the other actors at all. None of the girls or their parents.
Well, that's because you're old.
Yeah, true.
Lucy Hale, the Arya character, is a pretty popular actress that was popular before the show.
Oh, okay.
I think the other three girls had other roles, but their primary popularity comes from the show. But the girl who plays Maya has actually been playing a 16-year-old for about 15 years. She's incredible. I don't know why she doesn't age. I think she might literally be a vampire.
Which one is Maya? Sorry, remind me.
She's the young black girl that moves into Allison's house and meets Emily.
Oh, yes. The one who goes from we're complete strangers to, okay, now we're besties and smoking dope and going for walks together within about 90 seconds.
Well, you'll find out. I mean, you would find out if you were going to continue that they're not actually besties. Because remember, Emily's gay.
Well, sure. And that comes across fairly clearly in the first episode that there's an attraction between them. But at the same time, the rapidity with which they go from I've never met you before to let's hang out for hours is quite remarkable.
You know, it is, but it's also a thing that I remember from being a teenager. Maybe.
Oh, really?
I was just a really weird teenager because I find a lot of relatability behind the extremes,
right,
in the show.
I think it's more likely that I was the weird teenager, to be perfectly honest with you. And yeah, I mean, obviously the lives of teenage girls is a sort of a world that is forever unknown and alien to me. So
sure.
I will take your word for it.
I mean, I think there's definitely a thing, especially in junior high and high school, where you meet somebody that you've never met before or that you never considered before. And all of a sudden you realize that you have everything in common. You both like the same boy from the same band, like, and not even the one that's the popular boy from that band, but like a side singer. You know, like when it was NSYNC and you were like, oh my God, you like Joey too. Nobody likes Joey. And then you're best friends forever.
And that was a thing?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I remember for me, it happened with this girl, Brittany Eddy, and we spent an entire day hanging out at her house. It was the first time we ever hung out. And we discovered that we had literally everything in common, the same favorite nail polish color, the same boy band likes. And actually, we had the same boy band likes and were also super ashamed of our boy band likes because we were both hypothetically more into metal.
Right.
And didn't want to necessarily admit our diehard love for NSYNC.
I was going to say, for me, when I was a teenager, certainly that kind of immediate friendship came about more through being, you know, discovering somebody else who was a Motorhead fan or something.
But see, you're only allowed to like one, right?
Like one what?
You're not supposed to like Kitty and the Spice Girls.
Oh, I see. I see. Well, no, that's true, because I did used to, I also was, you know, an enormous fan of bands like Genesis and also A-ha. I'm still a massive fan of A-ha. And that did used to get some funny looks from people.
To the extent that you would maybe not even admit it in public?
No, I did always admit it, but then I was always that kind of bloody-minded person who would revel in the fact that, you know, my tastes were a bit odd.
All right. Sure.
I enjoyed seeing the looks on people's faces when they, you know, saw the long-haired metalhead kid listening to a Bee Gees album.
Sure. Yeah. I think it's interesting that the show sort of plays with that idea that you're only allowed to be in one category also.
Well, and that is kind of, I mean, that is a very teenage attitude. And as I say, I enjoyed seeing the look on people's faces precisely because I knew that they expected that I could only like one thing, and that if I liked heavy metal, therefore I couldn't possibly also enjoy pop music.
Right.
So that is very much a real thing of teenage life.
I do think that both the show and I personally have tried to play with that. For instance, I was very ashamed of my love for NSYNC, but that didn't stop me from being a cheerleader.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Wait, why would being a fan of NSYNC stop you from being a cheerleader?
No, I was very attached to my sort of goth persona.
Oh, I see.
In high school. And so I hid the NSYNC thing, but I was very open about the cheerleading thing.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. More ashamed of liking NSYNC than of wanting to be a cheerleader. Huh.
Okay, cheerleading is a fantastic sport where you get to jump around a lot and you get to shout things. And those are both really fun activities.
I can see how that would appeal to you, yeah.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Nevertheless, it is something that's associated much more with, well, not with goth girls.
Right. So breaking the stereotypes, breaking the who you're supposed to be can be a very difficult thing for a teenager. It's much easier now as an adult because you realize that maybe the supposed to thing is a really stupid construct.
And I wonder what sort of perspective that gives. Like, I did wonder, who is this show aimed at? Is it actually aimed at teenage girls, or is it aimed at older, you know, like adult women who can sort of look back on that period of their lives with a bit more distance, a bit more perspective, and, you know, sort of one step removed. Because as you say, as you get older, you realize that whole, oh, you can only be into one thing is ridiculous. But at the time you may not think that, and the show is clearly commenting on that. So I wonder if they're trying to have the best of both worlds, or if they are, you know, firmly aiming it at an older audience, even though the main characters are younger.
I am one of the older fans that I know in the online fandom, mm-hmm. at 29, so, you know, ancient. But I do think most of the people I know online are in their 20s. I don't, and maybe it's because I just don't know teenagers, but I don't know many teenagers that watch the show.
Well, plenty of them are on Tumblr, so.
Right.
I think if there was a large actual teenage audience, you would probably know about it from Tumblr and Facebook and what have you.
Yeah. Well, so maybe they don't exist. Maybe it's just women in their 20s like me.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that, but that's what I say. That's why I was wondering, because it the show is clearly commenting on that sort of attitude and how restrictive it can be. And so that's why I wondered if maybe therefore it was aimed at people who can agree with that. Whereas when you are that age, you might not, and probably the majority of people would not disagree with that notion necessarily. They might not see the commentary for what it is.
Sure. I think that a lot of media sort of suffers from the people who are within a certain age group taking it at its face value.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's true. But if that was a majority of the audience for this show, then that might not be, you know, it might not have sustained the show for so many years.
Yep. Well, and it's been long enough that even if you started watching the show when you were a teenager, you are now in your late teens, early 20s.
That's true. Yeah, you're not a teenager anymore. Yeah.
Right.
In fact, you would literally, yeah. If you were 13 when you started watching the show, you would now be, oh no, you'd now be 19. So you'd just be a teenager.
they do, for a show that's pop culture garbage, as it is so often coded, they do a lot with people of color. They do a lot with the LGBTQ community. They absolutely both allow these things. Like Emily is an Asian woman, and it informs her character in a lot of ways, but it's not the only thing that informs her character. It doesn't define her.
Right.
And I think that that's a really crucial and important thing that a lot of, you know, pop culture garbage doesn't take into account.
Well, and it would be so easy to fall into traps and stereotypes with that sort of thing. Like in the pilot, when you first meet her mother, and it's clear that her mother sort of disapproves of any kind of weirdness or, you know, anything unconventional. I was bracing myself, waiting for the stereotypical controlling Asian mother character to come out. And thankfully she didn't, you know, it was much more restrained than that. And actually, you know, there was nothing she did or said that you wouldn't expect from any mother character in a show like that, regardless of her ethnicity. So I was quite impressed by that, actually.
Yeah, it's great. They do later in the show have a trans woman character that I think is not dealt with very well.
Right.
And that's very upsetting to me, because it started down this path where it could have been good, and then they just sort of made all of her identity about deception.
Right, right.
Which is a really troubling thing for the trans community, but for especially trans women. The idea that, you know, you're deceiving people into thinking you're a real girl. Because that's I think, the majority of violence against trans women comes from that concept of deception.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
And so I wish they had done a better job with that character, and that's not until the most recent season.
Right. I was going to ask if that character is from the books, but you don't know.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I would imagine that she would be.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's that only caught me on the hop, because I think with something like this, I think perhaps what I was expecting you to say was that you'd read the books as a younger woman, and then when they adapted them to a TV series, you know, you started watching the TV show. But then I looked into it and realized that the TV show started within, like, I think a year or 2 years of the first book being published. So that would have been quite difficult.
Yeah, no, I've never really been a devotee of a particular, like, poppy book series.
Right. Well, it's teen chick lit, essentially.
Right.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, but if you're not into that, then you wouldn't come across it.
Right. No, my chick lit tends to be more like the Secret History of the Pink Carnation. It's great, because it's like the Scarlet Pimpernel plus chick lit.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you say that you found, you know, a fandom online and especially on Tumblr, but what about in real life? I mean, have you managed to convert any of your friends to watching this?
No.
Is that not for want of trying, I assume?
No, I don't talk about it in person much. There are a number of people who are aware that I watch it and sort of laugh at me for it. And I'm always ready to defend it, but nobody ever seems to really take it seriously.
Right. Nobody sees it as an argument worth having, as it were.
Right. Well, and I'm not always a very serious person. So I'm not sure how many of my friends think that I'm joking when I defend it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Right. They think you're just watching it for giggles.
I mean, that would be so much time to invest in watching something just to say, hey, I watched this terrible thing I hate.
Isn't that funny? Yeah, no, that is kind of, yeah. that's a lot of time, especially it's something that's gone for six seasons.
Yeah, no, and I don't hate watch things typically. And I'm not interested in spending that much of my time watching something that's not appealing to me.
Right. No, I'm totally on board with that. There are many series where I'll watch, you know, half a season, sometimes even a whole season. But if I'm not desperately then waiting for the next season by the end of it, then I won't continue.
Sure.
Life's too short, man. And it's not like there's a shortage of decent TV around at the moment.
That's absolutely true.
So, I hate the term guilty pleasure. You know, part of the reason for this show is to try and strike that notion from people's minds. I hate the idea that you should feel guilty for enjoying something that is clearly made for people to enjoy, you know, and just because you might be in a minority or, you know, in minority amongst your friends at any rate, the idea that you should feel guilty for that, I think is, you know, just absolutely not a good one. But what has kept you watching it then? I mean, you say that it deals with the girl's issues well, but that is within the framework of this mystery. And so, you know, it's not like that's the point of the show. So what is it that keeps you coming back to it? What has kept you watching it through all these episodes, as you say, and all this time that you've spent?
I'm always interested in the idea that, and I'm pretty sure at this point, because I was rewatching season one to prepare for the show, your show. I'm pretty sure that they didn't have the ending that they ended up with in mind when they started it.
Okay.
So as I was watching, I spent a lot of time wondering where it was going, which is always, I mean, that's why you consume any media, right? Is because you want to know
what happens next. Yeah.
Yeah. And it seemed very intricate. And now I'm pretty convinced that it's like 70% intricate, 30% make it up as we go, which is not a bad ratio.
I was just going to say the same thing compared to some shows, you know, Lost. That's really, you know, that's not that bad a ratio. No.
Well, and we've got more serious shows like Lost or like Battlestar Galactica.
Right.
Where if you just skip the last 6 minutes of the finale.
The final episode, yeah.
Yeah.
Then it's fine. Yeah.
It is. Yeah, no, those 6 minutes really ruined the series for me.
Yeah, me too. but if the ultimate, if the answer to your overriding mystery falls within that 30% that you're making up, that's not so good. And that seems to be what you're saying here.
Right. It's not ideal in that sense. No, I think I do keep coming back for the characters in a lot of ways. Because I'm less interested in who A is and more interested in how Emily is going to deal with liking two girls at once, and one of them is still in the closet, and Emily can relate to that. And so I'm there for the relationships, I think.
And it seems to be a show very much built around the relationships of the characters. I mean, that much was clear even in the first episode. Yes, there is this mystery, and that is the premise of the show, but all of the character establishing scenes were about the relationships they have with family and friends.
Well, and it doesn't hurt that it's just a very pretty show. You and I both work in media that are very visual. Video games, comics, these are things where the aesthetic matters a lot.
Yeah.
And I know that there are shows like The Killing, where they intentionally cast actors and then style those actors so that they look more like real people. And I enjoy that this show does not attempt to make these girls look anything like
no, high quite the opposite.
Right now.
Yeah.
No, and it's fantastic. It's beautiful.
It's very much one of those, well, stereotypically American shows where everybody is beautiful. Like there is nobody here who could not get a job modeling.
Right. Well, and who doesn't like beautiful people? I love watching beautiful people.
Oh yeah, it just depends on this kind of show. It's just from a non-American perspective, that seems to be a very American thing. You know, we often joke about it over here, and I know Europe, sees it the same way. That you're just not allowed on American television if you're not, you know, just a beautiful person. You can't even do the weather or read the news or, you know, sell secondhand cars if you're not of sort of square-jawed in the case of men or, you know, long-legged in the case of women, model variety.
Well, I mean, isn't that what The Only Way Is Essex trying to accomplish?
I suppose, but I loathe those shows. And,
not Skins, though. You like Skins, right?
I have only seen a very small amount of Skins, actually. It didn't. I'm a bit old for it to appeal to me, if you like.
Well, everybody's beautiful in that, too.
Yeah, the stuff like The Only Way Is Essex, frankly, I don't think those people are anywhere near the same level as the people in something like Pretty Little Liars in terms of looking beautiful on the screen. You know, they're clearly going for it, but I think they fall quite short.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's just because Americans are prettier.
I think it may well be.
Oh, I was kidding. I'm sorry.
No. But in terms of, you know, media and actors, that's absolutely a thing. You know, there are very popular, very successful actors here in the UK and in Europe some of whom have tried to make it in Hollywood and failed because they're regarded as like too weird looking, not handsome enough or whatever.
I think we've got our ugly people quota in American media.
Well, I was going to say, look at somebody like Benedict Cumberbatch, who, you know, is a very strange looking man. There's no way he would have had the success he's had in Hollywood now if he hadn't already become a sensation thanks to his work in the United Kingdom. I think if he'd gone to America as a relative unknown, despite the fact that he's a phenomenal actor, I very much doubt that he would have become the huge movie star that he now is.
Well, a lot of girls think he's really cute.
Oh, sure. But those girls are not in charge of casting Hollywood movies.
That's true. I also don't get it. offense to him, I just don't think that he's physically attractive.
Do you not like otters? What's wrong with you?
I love otters.
So yes, it is a very good looking program, a very sort of full of beautiful people, quite nicely shot. I mean, it's network TV, so there's only so much they can or probably want to do. You know, it's not like this isn't like you said, The Killing, for example. Right. It's not that sort of cinematic style, but certainly it looks fine. It certainly didn't look cheap, which is right. You know, sometimes a problem with media, especially media aimed at younger people.
No, this is definitely quality programming in a lot of ways.
And yet, I was going to say, and yet nobody seems to agree. But if they're up to six seasons, then, and I know it's on the CW, so they don't need the kind of ratings that you'd need on like NBC or something, but somebody must be watching it, and enough must be watching it that advertisers are interested.
Absolutely. It's so commonly known as garbage TV, but, you know, so many things are. And again, I believe that the majority of things that are categorized as garbage TV are geared toward women, which is, you know, kind of screwed up.
Mm, that's true. Well, and even, you know, speaking of places like NBC and what have you, even a lot of the cop and crime procedurals that dominate the primetime schedules, frankly, are, you know, mostly watched by women. The vast majority of Law and Order and even Law and Order SVU is women, the vast majority of their audience, and they know that.
Yeah, absolutely. I have the box set of SVU.
What, the whole thing?
No, just season one.
Oh, right.
I'm not quite that crazy. I do personally consume media that's geared toward women, mostly.
Deliberately?
No, because I do also, I am a big fan of a lot of action movies and martial arts movies, but I decided not to feel guilty for also enjoying 27 Dresses.
Right.
I mean, what's wrong with liking it all, right?
Yeah, well, exactly. As we were saying earlier, you know, there's no reason that you shouldn't.
Tony Jaa is great, and so is Lucy Hale. And they're great at different things. Although, you know, if Lucy Hale could kick out a street light the way that Tony Jaa could, she would be a very, very impressive human being.
Well, and all these actresses are young. There's still time for them to, you know, get that action role.
That's true.
Do a bit of, do the Daisy Ridley workout.
Yeah.
Get themselves into shape. Have you seen that video?
No.
Oh, yeah. There's a compilation taken, I assume, by her trainer on YouTube, a compilation of her working out and training for the role of Rage. Like, she basically, as soon as she found that she got the role, she started spending 4 hours a day every day in the gym. And it's quite impressive. Like, by the end of training, she is deadlifting like 75 pounds or something. It's, which, you know, for a woman her size is really quite impressive.
See, and I can bench like 35.
Pounds or kilos?
Pounds.
Okay, that's pretty good. No,
it is not good.
I'm trying to make you feel better here.
No, it's fine. No, and that's another interesting thing is that we've got these different values, right, for serious women actors and beautiful women actors.
Right, yeah.
And even your Charlize Therons don't get really recognized until they ugly it up in, what was that movie about Eileen Wuornos?
Monster?
Yep, that one. And so because these girls are always beautiful, I mean, God, they've got to be in amazing shape because they're so thin and muscular. So I have to believe that they are probably capable of a lot of the same physical feats that your female action stars are capable of.
You'd hope so. Yeah, certainly. I mean, as you say, then it's not like they're carrying any excess weight, but right. but you don't necessarily know how fit they might be.
Well, you can see their arms. They wear tank tops.
Right,
you can tell when an arm has muscle. Usually.
Okay, I wasn't really looking for their guns.
I mean, that's really on you.
I did notice that they couldn't wait to get one of the characters into her swimsuit.
Spencer.
In the first episode. And I assume that's something, you know, as you say, because these women, these actors are all so beautiful, I assume that they all get into some kind of skimpy outfit at various points throughout the series, because that seems to be de rigueur.
Well, and obviously also their pajamas are all unrealistic and amazing.
What, too glamorous?
Yeah. Well, so right now I'm wearing my pajamas, which are a Mad Max Fury Road t-shirt and Beavis and Butthead pants.
I think that says everything that people need to know about you, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, I'm comfortable with that. And these girls are wearing like, and not like to sleepovers where it maybe matters a little more what people see. But like just in their own beds at bedtime, they're wearing like full length nightgowns or satin tank and short sets. And just like they're always perfect.
Right.
They're perfect out of the shower. They're perfect at all times. Even when they've got the concept of, oh, I'm ugly crying, they're still perfect.
Yeah. Not ugly crying so much as slightly less perfect crying.
Yes.
So are you going to continue watching? I mean, let's say that the show goes for another 4 seasons. They make it to 10 seasons or something. Will you continue to watch?
So like I said, I'm really unhappy about the way that they are treating the trans woman character. And so I'm at this point going to watch the next season because I'm hoping they turn it around.
Right.
Because her characterization is really only within the last few episodes of the most recent season. And I'm hoping she surprises us, or the writers do.
Yeah.
So I'm on board tentatively for another season. Beyond that, I can't say.
All right.
Also, there's a spinoff called Ravenswood that I think is so spectacular. Because they've shot a couple of episodes. I haven't seen the spinoff. They've shot a couple of episodes of the regular show in Ravenswood, because Rosewood is the main town.
Right.
And Ravenswood is just, God, how do I explain it? It's like the eeriest town in the entire world, where all of the colors are kind of muted and the city has like meetings in the cemetery and they are all just staring silently. And it's just amazingly creepy. And it's just, it's one of the many things in this show where the show just kind of says, okay, this is what's happening now. Take it in stride. You got to handle it.
Deal with it.
Yeah. And I love that.
I'm sorry to tell you that Ravenswood was cancelled after 10 episodes.
I mean, that does not surprise me. I don't know that it was the sort of thing that could be sustained much longer than that. But it was pretty great while it lasted. The episodes I saw in the main show.
Right.
I hope it's on Netflix.
I'm sure it will be. If the main show is, then, you know, why wouldn't they put the spin-off on Netflix?
Well, I know what I'm doing today.
Excellent. Well, I won't keep you from it. So, Katie, thank you very much for coming on the show. Where can people find you if they like what you have to say?
Well, I am on Twitter at the Katie Rex, where you can get a lot of pictures of my dog. And recently I've been planting a lot of succulents. That's my Twitter feed right now.
Is that a euphemism or?
No. succulents are a dry climate plant because I kill plants that require being watered more than once a week.
Oh, I see. So you buy a cactus because you know it won't yeah. die. It won't die.
It might still die. It's way less likely though. So, you know. But you can find me on Twitter. I also have a website, katierex.com, and that's Katie with a Y, where you can find my plethora of strange books, including Strange Wit, which you and I have talked about, which is the nonfiction biography of the famous lesbian author Jane Bowles, and also a new series about punk rock magical girls fighting the patriarchy. So, you know, kind of a variety.
Sure, just your usual.
Yeah. I mean, all chick stuff, but, you know.
I think if anybody has been persuaded to watch Pretty Little Liars on the basis of this show, they're not going to have a problem with chick stuff.
All right, good. I love chick stuff. Chick stuff is great.
Thanks for listening to Unjustly Maligned, and please remember to check out my comics, books, and music. Go to anthonyjohnston.com for information and links to all of my work. You can support the show by rating Unjustly Maligned on iTunes. And if you really like it, please leave a review. It's the best way to spread the word to new listeners. Unjustly Maligned is a 7RQ production for The Incomparable and is made in England. You can find more information, links and show notes at ump.fm. Thanks for listening and we'll see you next time.
Did you like it?
What, the show?
Yeah.
It's clearly not aimed at me and it's not really my thing. But I can imagine, you know, if I were in the target audience, it was well made, you know, there was nothing in it that made me cringe. There were a few things that as an adult male, I found it hard to identify with, or things where, like I say, the rapidity with which people made friends seemed a little absurd. But there was nothing in it that made me wince or cringe, you know, nothing that I was like, oh, that's ridiculous. I can't possibly watch this. So if I was in the target audience, I think I probably would watch it, yeah.
All right. Hey, well, then I feel like I've done my job.
I watched Supernatural. I mean, you know.
Oh, that was good, too.
Yeah, what?
Not the first season, though.
I think I may have missed the first season, to be fair. I think I may have got into it with season two. But, I had no problem with that. And that was another very self-aware show. Same network as well by the end. But that was another very self-aware show where it knew what kind of show it was and was not ashamed about that.
Well, I feel like every episode of the most recent season of Supernatural is fan service. And so I think that one's taking it a little too far, honestly.
Oh, I haven't actually watched it since the sort of original ending, you like before they brought it back.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, it's all fan service.
Right, oh, okay. But they still did a fair amount of fan service, even leading up to that. You know, to the point where they, I don't know if you remember, they had episodes that were actually based at Supernatural fandom
conventions.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I do like that.
Really meta.
I feel like they really jumped the shark, though, in the most recent season.
As I say, when they got to the point where it was effectively, you know, finished and they gave it an actual ending, I was like, and I knew that they were bringing, by the time we saw it in the UK, news had already broken that actually they had decided that they were going to bring it back, but with new showrunners and a new team and what have you. But so I was like, that's my jumping off point. That's, you know, I'm good.
Do you want me to spoil Pretty Little Liars for you?
Yeah, go for it. Cause I, like I say, I'm genuinely not going to, there's no way I'm going to sit and watch six seasons.
Okay. So do you remember Hannah's friend Mona?
Which one was that?
Dark hair, probably Pacific Asian.
Vaguely.
Okay. Yeah. She's not really.
Oh, wait. Is she the one where she walks into the classroom and they're like, oh, wow. How come she's friends with her all of a sudden?
Yeah. Right, yeah. That's right. Her. So she's kind of a throwaway joke for a couple of seasons. And then it turns out she's A.
Right. Oh, is she the girl that they were blanking on the street in the flashback?
Yes.
Right. Okay. Well, that that makes sense then. Yeah. Yeah.
And then we find out that she might not be the only A. A is actually a team of people. And then the team of people was organized by a single driving force who, for a while, they're like, wait, now it seems like the driving force is Allison, but is also trying to get Allison. And then it turns out that it's this woman, Cece. And Cece was born Charles, and Charles was Allison's brother.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yep. And so Charles was sent to a psychiatric hospital for a while. And he was sent there because somebody thought he was trying to drown his sister, but he wasn't. And so that began his lifelong obsession with Allison. And then when he was 14 or something, his mother helped him fake his own death. And continue living still at the psychiatric hospital, but as a woman. So at that point, she completely transitioned. She, I think, had surgeries, just became a very beautiful young lady that looks just like Allison.
Right.
She infiltrated the De Laurentiis family by dating Allison's older brother, Jason, who is also her own brother, and nobody recognized her.
Wow.
Yep. And then she created a dollhouse with exact replicas of each of the girls' bedrooms, only full scale, in the basement of a warehouse, and locked the girls in there for a month. It does not get very realistic near that last season.
Just gets weirder. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about that character, but the idea that there are actually multiple A's is, I believe, taken from the book series. So actually it's closer than I realized.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Because from what I saw looking it up, I haven't read any of them, but what I saw was that each quartet of books in the series ends with the revelation of one of the A's. And then the next one starts afresh with a new A for the mystery to be revealed.
Sure. Well, I should probably read the books then.
Yeah, although it sounds like you probably, spoilers, it sounds like you already know how they're going to end.
Yeah, I don't actually remember why I was telling you that. Do you?
No. Okay. Sorry, I was trusting you to keep the thread going.
No, there was a reason. I had a good reason. Did you know that there's a zoo, and I don't remember where it is, where you can, I just got a link sent to me by a friend, where you can hold hands with the otters. They've got a little porthole in the tank where the otter will stick his hand through.
Excellent.
It's so cute. But so I would do that, but I would probably not hold Benedict Cumberbatch's hand.
The vast majority of Law and Order's audience was women, and certainly Law and Order SUV was women, and they know that.
SVU.
Sorry, did I say SUV?
You did, which is a totally different show.